Nice. That was Pat's idea. Welcome back to the Up North Podcast. I wanted to listen to every last bit of that Earth, Wind, and Fire, buddy. This is Pat Kreitlow.
Then we have to pay more for usage rights here. So, you know, we just talk up the ramp. That's it. hey, if you're new to the show, here's some of the fine print before we get back to our guest host, Dr. Kristen Lyerly. We are not just a weekly podcast. We are a live radio show. Thanks to the nice folks at News Talk 92.7 in Madison who give us a broadcast home every Wednesday evening at 7. You can use their Devil Radio app to catch our show or any of the fine programs here on the home of Devil's Advocates Radio. From a podcast perspective, you can catch us on our website, upnorthpodcast.com. We try to post by about Friday morning for your weekend listening enjoyment. And as a reminder, the show is also not affiliated with Up North News, which is the state-based news site that I helped start for Courier Newsroom. But I'm happy to urge you all to check it out online. Just search for Up North News WI. Don't forget the WI. And Kirk will talk more about the Minocqua Brewing Company Super Pack a little later in the show and throughout the season. And Kirk, I forgot to wish you at the very beginning, thanks to a proclamation from Governor Evers, it's Brandy Old Fashioned Day in Wisconsin. So
cheers, man. Cheers.
Cheers to you. Cheers.
I'm drinking a beer and so is Kristen. And had you told me, I might have cooked myself up one. So come on, man. I needed a little bit of a forewarning.
It's all right. I'm happy to pull the load in the meantime.
All right, so now let's cut out the chit chat, right? We got a lot of stuff to talk about here. So we got Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and we got to talk about COVID. So Kristen, it doesn't help matters that state Republicans first created this toxic work environment in terms of not cooperating or not meeting for the last whole year when COVID was running rampant in Wisconsin. But now they're actually creating a toxic work environment for themselves. That Senator Representative Jock got COVID. Before that, he was running around maskless around his colleagues and then later needed to be on a ventilator with COVID. Now you have Ron Johnson promoting horse dewormer instead of what actually works. Now you have Rebecca Clefish running for governor because she got COVID while she was running around at maskless events.
That one
and
was she's maskless too? It sounds familiar. There's a trend here.
It's like they can't wear it politically. And then finally, I mean, we can keep on going, but we've got all these local school board members, some of whom are about as wholesome as it gets, that are being overrun, that are being recalled by people who seemingly need a vaccine from Fox News. So Kristen, you're a doctor, your day, I can't imagine throughout COVID, your days have been full of frustrations. Can you just kind of give us your thoughts of what's happening right now, what's frustrating you, disappointing you, et cetera?
Where do you even start? I mean, here in the Green Bay area, of course, Senator Jock just left the hospital, but he did not go home. His staffers initially said that he was going home. He's in a long-term acute care facility. This is widely known. My guess is that he's still receiving assistance with breathing. He is not in good shape, and it is going to take him a very long time to recover. I mean, why are they covering this up? Why did they cover it up initially when he was diagnosed? Why was he even speaking in this area where other people were exposed? And then he didn't tell them when he had a positive diagnosis.
In there for hours in those meeting rooms in the Capitol with immunocompromised people in there. And those folks had to find out he'd been hospitalized from news reports rather than hearing from the leaders of the legislature. It's unconscionable, Kristen, but you know, as Kirk was pointing out, these are things you see every day. I mean, don't get me wrong. You see plenty of folks who are taking this seriously, but I'm pretty sure you see, you know, a fair share of patients who kind of give you that, you know, cocked eyebrow and go, you know, is this really all that? And you have to set them straight, don't you?
Yeah, but I think that when you are a trusted voice in their community, whether you are a friend or a healthcare provider, or just someone who can have a good conversation with someone that is reasonable. Like, here's an example. I went to the farmer's market here in Green Bay, and there was an anti-vaxxer standing on the corner who ended up getting arrested because he was making people so upset. So I walked over to the vaccine bus to give the nurse who was doing vaccinations a little pep talk. She was so busy that she didn't even know what was happening. But there was a man inside who was headed to Canada to go fishing, and he needed to get a vaccine to go. So that was his in. And his wife was outside, unvaccinated. And she and I started a conversation about why she was reluctant to get the vaccine. And we stood there for probably 10 minutes, and it was a very respectful conversation where she shared some of her concerns and she shared some of her hesitations and recognized that a lot of it didn't make a lot of sense, but there was just something that didn't feel right. And when her husband came off the bus, they left, we thanked each other. And 10 minutes later, she came back and got her vaccine. And I think it's because we just had this, we listened to each other, and I wasn't yelling at her, and she was asking good questions. I hear this from pediatricians. There's a Spanish-speaking pediatrician here in Green Bay who finds these reluctant adults, parents, and children, and is able to communicate with them culturally appropriate in a trusted environment. And she said 9 times out of 10, they get the vaccine right then and there. So it really does come down to trust.
I mean, we really would like to think that everybody, I mean, I was certainly part of that group that raced to get this as soon as it was available. A lot of other people did. It was certainly unrealistic to expect that, you know, everybody would, but it is worth noting that as frustrated as we get with some people who I'm about to refer to, there are still people that, like you said, just need that one more conversation, just want to address a concern or what have you. Those folks we can still deal with that. It's the ones who, I know you've heard this one, I'm going to do my own research.
Yeah. Right.
Really?
My best
really?
Friend. Yeah. My best friend is that way. She called me and said, well, you know, I have these health concerns and my chiropractor told me that I can't get the vaccine. So can you tell me about these two medications that I should take? She didn't know the names of the medications, but she wanted me to hook her up with that information. And, you know, I've known her since we were 10. So I thought that I could reach her, but she is a very confident person who feels very special about her health conditions. So there's no way, you know, she's going to stick with what she thinks is right. I don't know if she's taking ivermectin. We decided not to talk about it. And that's kind of where we left it. We're never going to be able to convince everybody. But I think if you can have that gentle conversation, that evidence-based conversation with someone that you trust, I think that there's room for negotiation there.
Well, it doesn't help, however, though, that, you know, if they're listening to the wrong news, they're hearing mm-hmm. skepticism by people that they think are anchors, news anchors. They think that they're somehow official on Fox News. And that's what I never really hold these vaccine hesitant people really at fault. I hold media at fault, and I hold half of our political system at fault for putting fear into these people who don't know that, don't know any better, you know, and, yeah. and telling them to read quack doctors as opposed to listen to their own, you know, their own doctor at home.
Yeah, because you're totally right.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's not enough that you've got people coming in looking through, you know, the internet on their own, but now to have, you know, cable, you know, quote unquote news channels giving them information, again, it just makes your job and all of your other colleagues' jobs so much more challenging.
It does. And I have numerous stories from my friends who work in emergency medicine of people who come in with symptoms, are subsequently diagnosed with COVID, and then say to the doctor, I didn't know. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know who I could trust, but now I know that I should get the vaccine and I'm ready for it. And my friends, you know, they're tired of saying to people, it's too late. These people are literally dying because they got these mixed messages from politicians who, these politicians know that they are spreading misinformation. Mm-hmm. This is not a mistake. They know they're doing this, and it's just a travesty. It's a crime in our communities.
And what's really crazy is that they know especially at, say, the local radio level. They take their cues from the folks at Fox News and others who have been vaccinated, because Fox News basically has an employer mandate, not exactly, but, you know, a practical mandate there that everybody there has been vaccinated. And yet the folks dying are like the local right wing radio hosts and younger people and more children all the time. And it is just so heartbreaking. And it affects you in day-to-day lives, especially as hospitals up north continue to fill, as they're dwindled down to almost no ICU beds available. And, you know, Kristen, as an OBGYN, you've got, you know, you do elective surgeries from time to time. And I don't know, I would imagine last year you had to pause those for a time and have concerns about pausing them again.
Actually, I just got the email today that in Neenah, they're pausing surgeries. Mm-hmm. Also, the emergency department at Prevea here in Green Bay was closed yesterday, I believe. We can't handle this kind of volume again. But last year when this happened, we were all up in arms and very worried about it. And now it's not even in the news.
Mm-mm. Kristen, so the next segment we're going to have is we're going to talk to a school board member who has kind of been ridden out on the rails for supporting masks. I want to kind of set the stage, though, like what's going on in schools right now? So the Delta variant's here. Some kids can't get vaccinated. They're too young. Like, why are schools kind of vectors right now? And what really, what has to happen, even though it's not, might not be happening around Wisconsin, but in schools, what should be happening right now, you know, to make sure that this, like the Delta variant doesn't spread further?
Well, the good news is that we have data now that the vaccine is effective and safe in younger children. So as soon as that goes through the process with the ACIP, we should start to be able to get younger kids vaccinated, and that will be a game changer. But our school board leaders need to understand that this is not a personal health issue. This is a public health issue. And as school board leaders, they are responsible for the entire community, not just themselves. I went to one of our school board leaders here in the De Pere area, or went to one of the meetings, and a leader compared the choices that his wife was given for her cancer treatment to our choice to be able to wear a mask or not. And I just couldn't even believe that he was saying that, because yes, I am the first person to defend your ability to make informed, evidence-based decisions, and I will support you because only you live in that community of you. But when it comes to public health, we all have to do what the best thing is for the greater good. There are people who can't get vaccinated. There are people who are vulnerable. There are people who are at risk. And those of us who can stand up and help out must. So that's what school board leaders need to understand. Masks aren't perfect, but we have to do everything that we can to protect each other and keep each other safe.
So until these kids can get vaccinated, they need to be wearing masks, because they, even though it might not kill them, they can catch COVID and then give it to somebody that it might kill, like their grandparents or somebody who is immunocompromised who can't get the vaccine.
But wait, a 13-year-old died in Fort Atkinson, last week? I mean, kids are dying of this, and they're not just dying. For every person who dies of COVID, 100 other people suffer, whether it's long-term respiratory issues or long-term brain fog is what we're seeing in a lot of young people. Think of this like polio. I know that we're all way too young to remember polio, but back in the day when polio happened, a lot of people died, but a lot of other people were affected, and they still live here among us suffering from a virus that they had when they were kids. That's going to happen with COVID because we are not being careful in protecting our most vulnerable.
Yeah. I mean, people are not just selfish in the moment, but not thinking about those long-term ramifications for those who catch it and don't die. And that's one of the things that especially frustrates me, is people going, well, the chances of death are so small, blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's not just about dying. It's about all the other impacts that come from it, and the residual impacts like surgeries that don't happen, heart attack patients that die because there's not space in an ER or what have you. We'll get back to the school board end of things and the K-12 end of things in a minute, but in the 2 minutes we've got left, I want to take it up one notch to higher education. Kirk, Did you ever imagine in your wildest dreams as a former Democratic candidate that Tommy Thompson would be the moderate voice of sanity amongst Republicans, standing up to the current Republican legislators who want to force the UW system to basically abandon COVID safeguards? Whoever thought?
Right. I mean, well, it makes perfect sense because Tommy Thompson is not part of this new nihilistic Republican Trump cult. Like, he's an old guard guy that just cared about, like, you know, not spending too much money of tax dollars. He was a Republican that I understood. I don't understand this Republican Party, and he is too old to have to care about trying to get elected again. So he is what the Republican Party used to be. The Republican Party left him. He didn't leave the Republican Party.
Yeah, I always
Can I say
said
something
that.
Really quick?
Yeah,
Tommy Thompson loves Wisconsin too. So to him, Wisconsin, I hate to use the word trumps, but Wisconsin trumps everything else with his decision making. So I love him in this role because I think he feels very, very close to the UW system.
Well, because he remembers that time when, you know, going into politics was not just about politics. It was actually about public service, which involves public health, which involves public education, public transportation, all the public things we should be supporting that are now under attack more than ever. And again, thank goodness for Governor Thompson for that. Well, after the break, Patty Forsberg joins us. She was a member of the Somerset School Board, was because she and another member resigned rather than put the district through an expensive recall election brought up by folks afraid to wear a mask and get a vaccine to stop kids from dying. More in a bit. You're up north.